Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I'm an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as usual, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
I remember all my life raining down as cold as ice. Oh, Mandy.
An AM radio classic.
Yeah, we're going to talk today about who invented the radio. And you would think that this would have a very easy answer and that we could give it, and then you could be on your merry little way. Not so fast.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I was reading a book not too long ago that made me think about topics like this. But and Jonathan and I have talked about this with regard to TV.
Yeah.
Because there were two people who were working on how to create an electrical television, rather than a mechanical TV.
Yeah, because mechanical TVs had been around for a while, but no one had come up with an easily manufactured electric version.
Right. But in that case, we were really talking about primarily two people.
Yeah.
And we're sort of talking about two people here, give or take another 12 or 15.
Right. Yeah. There's two people that ultimately the question tends to boil down to, but that is too simplistic a look at radio. So to really get a handle on how complex this topic is, you actually have to go back more than five decades before radio came into being.
That's true. And again, like a lot of scientific discovery, each new iteration is an improvement on another technology or uses a technology that has recently been discovered in a new way. So
yes,
we're really, this is another one of those standing on the shoulders of giants situations.
Very, very apt. Yeah, this is all taking place. Well, the earliest parts are taking place in the early 19th century, but most of it's taking place within a two-decade period at the end of the 19th century, some of it spilling over into the early 20th century. And you're talking about an era in which you have an enormous intellectual revolution, right? You've got people who are wicked smart. right? These are guys and gals as well. I mean, we're in an age where there was science was reigning supreme. Scientists were the rock stars of this era.
They really kind of were.
Yeah. I mean, you had scientists who could command the attention of thousands at a speech. It was really hard to imagine now because, you know, you don't really think of, like, the guy from the LHC getting up and people doing the wave. But back then, these guys were the people who were shaping the Earth. So it's really a fascinating time, and there were so many developments, and so many people were working on this sort of technology at the same time. There's no surprise that there's controversy, because you got a lot of people all trying to figure out how to have a useful application of a newly discovered law or feature of the universe, right?
Right.
So clearly you're going to have some overlap.
So
let's start from before we're even talking about radio.
Okay.
All right. So we're going to talk about in 1837, there's a guy named Samuel Morse.
Right.
And Samuel Morse, of course, is famous for inventing the telegraph as well as Morse code, which was the series of bleeps and buzzes that would allow you to transmit information to communicate over wires over a long distance.
Right. The telegraph really changed the way the world communicated.
Significantly.
Right. It's one of those technologies that we like to say makes the world smaller.
Yes.
Because it significantly reduced the amount of time that news traveled the world. We heard about things far more quickly than we used to in the past. People were able to communicate with one another across great distances. Of
right.
course, you had to have a cable in order to make that happen.
Yeah, and that was the big barrier, right? I mean, the cable was definitely a lot more efficient than, say, the Pony Express or carrying a message across the ocean on a ship. But you still had to have a cable. You had to have a physical connection between two stations in order to transmit information. And unfortunately, that would mean that certain remote areas could not easily get a station. It also meant that you had a physical object that could withstand only so much punishment before it failed. So you had a cable that could be broken, or there could be some sort of interference there. That meant that it was, while it was a huge leap in communication from what came previously, there had to be a better way.
That's right. Well, once it became apparent to companies that the telegraph could make them lots and lots of money, people wanted to find better ways to use a telegraph and better telegraph technology.
Right, because you got to remember, that first telegraph wire, all it could do is transmit these sounds. There was no way to convert human voice into electricity and transmit it across a wire yet. No one had figured that part out back in 1837. And also, you could only transmit information one way at a time. You couldn't have two-way communication simultaneously.
And that's one of the things that a lot of inventors were out to do in the 19th century. They were earnestly looking for ways to improve, to make it possible to send telegraph messages in two ways, to improve the quality of the technology.
Yeah, without necessarily just laying a pair of cables and having one be one way and the other being the other way.
Yes.
I mean, you can do that, but you've just doubled your costs.
Exactly. Creating the infrastructure for this system is costly. As we all know, we're talking about things like, replacing twisted wire telephone lines with fiber optics.
Yeah, or even replacing 2G cellular technology with 3G or 4G technology.
That's right.
And even then, you're talking about major changes to infrastructure. It's not as simple as, oh, well, we just need to throw in a software patch and everything will be cool. It's not as simple as that.
And some of you may remember us talking in the past about the internet cables that run across the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, something will clip one of them.
Yeah.
And will knock out communication temporarily as traffic gets rerouted through the other lines. But, you know, it's having those giant wires running across the ocean is sort of impractical. It's not only costly, it's impractical. So, I mean, it works. but you know, you have to worry about maintenance and the possibility that something will cut one of the cables or that it will just age and snap.
Sure.
So so people were looking into this, but and investors were willing to back that because they saw the possibility that they might make lots and lots of money if they're if the inventors were able to capitalize on that. But some of them inadvertently started discovering other technologies, and a lot of those advancements came out, it turned out to be laying the groundwork for radio.
Yeah, and some scientists were working independently of the whole communications aspect entirely, and they were just interested in learning more about the way our universe works. One of those guys was a mathematician named James Clerk Maxwell. And 30 years after the invention of the telegraph, so in 1867, he started to think about light in a way that no one else had thought of up to that point. And he was thinking of light as an electromagnetic phenomenon.
Okay.
So he's looking at light and electric waves and magnetic waves, and he thinks these things are connected. These are not discrete phenomena. These are all somehow part of a spectrum of phenomena. So this was revolutionary. Now, unfortunately, Maxwell was unable to prove his theory during his lifetime. Now, we know today that this is true, that the light that we see, that's part of the electromagnetic spectrum. We can only perceive a very narrow band of that electromagnetic spectrum with our eyes. Now, other parts of the electromagnetic spectrum can affect us, sometimes in really nasty ways, but we can only see a pretty narrow band of it. So Maxwell was really ahead of his time, and his theories were part of what laid the scientific groundwork for radio. So you had the technological groundwork, and you had the scientific groundwork, and these things are converging at a really rapid rate, and we see that come to a head in the 1880s, really.
Yeah, yep. Somebody you might have heard of, Heinrich Hertz.
Ah, yes.
He was the first person to actually measure the speed of radio waves.
Yes.
And he basically, at the time, he was a professor at a German high school. And what he was doing, he used a couple of parabolic mirrors and a spark gap.
Mm-hmm.
You may have seen spark gap in those old-timey monster movies, the two pieces of metal that are sort of together at one end, and they diverge slightly, and the spark travels up from the short distance to the long distance, and it looks kind of spooky.
Yeah, it's stock for your average crazy scientist laboratory.
So
I have three.
Doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, don't put your hand in there.
Yeah. So Mr. Hertz basically proved what Maxwell was suggesting. He was able to transmit a spark from one antenna with a spark gap and a ring to another. And basically, this was kind of fascinating because at the time, there was nothing. I mean, there was no obvious connection. So you would look at it and go, "Wait a minute, that spark has traveled."
Right. Yeah. You had one thing generating a spark, right?
Right.
And then you had an antenna on the other side of the room that could pick up. You got a difference in voltage there, and there was no visible means of transmission. How did the energy from this one thing on one side of the room transmit to the other side?
Right. They not only did he show that Maxwell's right, and he was able to measure the speed of the waves and showed that the waves traveled in straight lines and they could be reflected. And the reflection is important because we use the Earth's atmosphere,
yes,
to reflect radio signals now.
Yep, yep.
But at the time, this was absolutely groundbreaking.
Exactly. And he discovered that speed that Chris was talking about, in case you're curious, was 186,000 miles per second. If that sounds familiar to you, it may be because that is the speed of light. And that's kind of where we're talking about how Hertz helped prove Maxwell's theories, because here was this other form of energy that was not visible light, but it traveled at the same speed as visible light traveled. Mm-hmm. So that suggests that the two are in some way related.
That's true. The thing is, though, we're not talking long distance with these transmissions.
No, we're talking about a room.
We're talking about within a room. But people began to experiment with this, one of whom was Oliver Lodge.
Yep.
A British scientist. He was able to get reception at about 70 yards with his most sensitive equipment. Others were able to get radio waves a little farther, a little shorter. Some people were absolutely stunned that radio waves could travel through buildings.
Yeah.
This was another one of those things that we sort of take for granted today because we're used to it, but you couldn't see it. So it was sort of weird.
Yeah, this was counterintuitive to that whole electromagnetic theory, right? Because light, we know, if you have an opaque structure, that's going to block light. You
That's
don't
right.
see light shining through the walls. If you did, you'd go crazy. You'd never sleep.
Well, it depends on how porous the walls are.
I guess it does. You know, I've lived in some places, let me tell you. Anyway, but in a solid, opaque structure, it's going to block light. So the theory would be, well, if light and this other form of electromagnetic energy are related, then clearly this opaque thing's going to block that too. Not so much.
Nope.
And it was very confusing early on.
That's true. And I was trying to figure out who we should talk about next.
Well, there are a lot of players in here. There's Popov, who he had laboratory demonstrations of radio that he did back in 1895. So Lodge, his work was in 1894, right?
Mm-hmm.
So just a year later, you've got Popov doing experiments in the lab in 1895, and he's also working with various methods to transmit radio waves. And you have to, again, you got to have a transmitter and a receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And those are your basic elements of a radio. And early radios were either one or the other. It was a while before people could develop a radio that could both transmit and receive, like to allow for two-way communication. A transceiver. Those early experiments were really just figuring out the whole the mode of transmission and reception. And in fact, earliest radio signals were not tuned to a specific frequency like they are today. Like today, you tune into a radio station. Those earliest ones were kind of more like a shotgun approach. You know, that you would get a range of frequencies. So there wasn't a big problem early on because you had so few people working on this. There wasn't a lot of contamination and interference. But if we were to be using those same methods today, you wouldn't be able to tune in to more than a couple of stations because they'd be taking up a really broad range of the spectrum.
Right.
So the earliest days of radio, it was free for all. You could broadcast on whatever part of the spectrum you wanted because there were so few people out there, there was nothing to compete with.
Okay. So, they're one of the people that I read about sort of as a red herring.
Yeah.
Was a guy named William Crookes who some believe for a while that he may have had a hand in creating wireless telegraphy, basically using radio as a telegraph. Because in February 1892, he published an article in the Fortnightly Review. And in that article, he used the word telegraphy. He said syntony, that's a fancy word, and I would say probably an obsolete word for the ability to tune. He said,
certainly archaic.
Yeah, definitely. Because I haven't heard it before I started doing any research on this syntony. Oh, that's kind of a cool word. But yeah, he said, oh yes, there will be, you'll be able to use this wireless telegraph and you'll be able to tune it to a specific frequency and get messages. But the problem was he had a lot of scientifically incorrect information in that article.
Right.
Now, some people said, oh, well, look, he's inspired a lot of people to do this, but there aren't a lot of people who credit him with inspiring them to work on radio technology. And it seems like the article sort of came to light years later after radio was becoming a thing. Some actually suggested that maybe he was trying to take credit for it after the fact.
But, so he was retconning.
But it seems like I would guess that there are people who are like Crookes who had an idea. That's a kind of an ironic name.
Yeah.
Who at least had a grip to some degree on what you could do with the technology. They had a piece of it, but not the whole picture.
Yeah, another guy who appeared to have the whole picture but was a little too reluctant to share his technology. This guy could have been the inventor of radio.
Right. Some people give him credit for it.
This guy, because he was able to demonstrate radio very early on, comparatively speaking. So in 1892, you have an inventor by the name of Nathan Stubblefield.
Right, from Murray, Kentucky.
He was a farmer and inventor.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly, if you're farming, you're going to think, I want to invent me a radio. I am amazed. I mean, to me, it shows that ingenuity is a phenomenal thing, and it can strike anywhere, right?
Sure.
So you have Stubblefield, who was legitimately a really smart and clever guy. And so in 1892, he publicly demonstrates a wireless communication system. And not only does it broadcast radio signals, he could actually broadcast voice and music. Now, keep in mind, the earliest radio public demonstrations were all tones. It wasn't like you could do a symphony over the radio. It was you could transmit Morse code over the radio. So here you have Stubblefield in 1892 demonstrating this. And he was able to do it again in 1898, which this one was actually documented. 1892 is undocumented, so it could be up for debate. But in 1898, the St. Louis Dispatch documented a demonstration he did where he transmitted radio waves at a distance of around 500 yards. This was a big problem with a lot of the early radio broadcasters. They didn't have a lot of range to their broadcasts, right? 500 yards is not that far.
Right. So you'd have your DJ coming on and say, I have a short distance dedication.
Right, yeah. This guy over here dedicates it to that gal over there. You can see each other. Why don't you wave? But he demonstrates it, and he could have potentially been the father of the radio. But here's the problem. Stubblefield was a little paranoid. He was worried that people were going to steal his invention. So worried that he would hide it away in a shack and lock it up. And then he got an offer to sell his invention. And it was $500,000 for his invention. This was around, in the late 1800s, early 1900s. $500,000. That's a lot of clams.
It is.
It's a lot of clams today, and it was even more clams. It was like an entire bed of clams back then. And so Stubblefield turned it down. And what's interesting to me is we actually see this mirrored in the way some companies behave today. I was talking to Chris about this earlier. There's another company that recently was offered about $6 billion to be an acquisition of another larger company. But they turned it down. This company turned down that $6 billion offer and valued itself at $25 billion. But as a result of waiting around too long, one could argue, the value of the company has dropped significantly since then. And Chris, what's the name of that company?
Groupon.
So here, Groupon took the internet by storm. Everyone was really impressed by Groupon. Everyone thought that this was really where things were moving. Well, that's kind of the problem, because things were moving in that direction, but there was no way to protect Groupon's business model. And so lots of other companies sprang up that mimic Groupon's business model, some of which you might even argue improve on Groupon's business model. Well, because Groupon was kind of holding back, now its position is a little more tenuous because you have all these competitors that could steal the limelight away from Groupon. The same thing happened more than 100 years ago with Stubblefield. This is a story that goes back decades and decades. You know, you'd think we'd learn our lesson by now. You know, you strike while the iron is hot, people. So Stubblefield, because he sat on his invention and because he did not act upon it, he was scooped by other inventors. And there's a pair of people who we need to talk about, one of whom was ultimately scooped by the other one. And the other one used the technology of the first.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah.
And as a tragic conclusion to Stubblefield's story.
Yes.
He died a pauper of starvation.
Wow. So
he turned the money down.
And I guess his farm didn't survive either.
Apparently.
Because, I mean, starvation and a farmer. Wow. But it was Kentucky, so maybe he was just growing, you know, bourbon. It grows on trees, right? I don't know.
Oh.
I don't drink, so I have no knowledge of that.
Shall we move on?
Sure.
And talk about those two fellows you mentioned?
So here are the two people that most discussions about who invented the radio, ultimately it boils down to these two guys, even though as we've argued, there are a lot of other people you have to consider in this equation. And that is Nikola Tesla and, I'm just going to say, G. Marconi, because I can't pronounce his first name.
All right, then.
It's Italian, and I am not.
So Marconi is often given the credit for inventing the radio.
In fact, he has the official credit, at least by the in the eyes of the United States government, for inventing the radio.
Yes, other people give credit to other people, but, you know, that's the way it goes with these things.
So Marconi was legitimately working on radio. It's not like Marconi was just some guy who swept in and stole everything. He was actually working hard on trying to find a way to make long-distance radio transmission a reality. He was having some trouble, though. A lot of his transmissions were going to a maximum distance of about 1.5 kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not far enough for real broadcast power. So in fact, I think I read somewhere where one critic said that his broadcast wouldn't reach across a pond, which makes me wonder if that's where we got that. You know, when you go across the pond,
right?
But I honestly don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know. But it does make me wonder if that's where we got that phrase, because ultimately Marconi was able to send a signal from Europe to America.
Yeah. That would be a question for Away With Words.
Yeah, yeah. Does the phrase across the pond date back to Marconi's invention, or, you know, credited invention of the radio?
But Marconi used a lot of technology.
Developed by someone else.
Developed by Nikola Tesla.
Yes. So much so that Nikola Tesla, probably not entirely jokingly, said that Marconi was using... He wished Marconi well. The man's using 17 of my patents.
Well, and that may be true.
Yes, it may be true.
I didn't look into it that far. But the thing, and that was the case for a lot of things. In the creation of alternating current, Westinghouse, George Westinghouse, was using a lot of Tesla's patents too.
Right.
And in using the technology that Tesla patented, assuming, you know, that Tesla is getting credit for it, then Tesla would earn some, you know, with a properly licensed patent, then Tesla should be earning some residuals on Marconi's invention.
Yeah, here's the problem. Marconi... Well,
there's a problem?
Marconi didn't admit readily that he was using any of Tesla's stuff.
Oh.
Like, what Tesla had managed to do was he was able, through the... Actually, really, Tesla coils is what we're getting down to. He was able to invent a way of creating really powerful... bursts of energy, of electricity.
Right. You remember the hertz and mm-hmm. using the transmitting the electrical energy from one place to another.
Right.
So the Tesla coil is far more powerful.
Yeah. It's a refined, powerful invention that's based upon that principle. And through using this as part of a radio transmission system, Marconi was able to transmit signals much further than he could on his old system. But and according to some of the reports I've read, and there's a lot of, I mean, there are Tesla supporters out there who rake Marconi over the coals. And then there are other people who either dismiss Tesla's involvement or they downplay it. There's some people who are true Marconi supporters. The whole thing is really muddy, right?
Yes.
But from what I gather, Marconi tried to argue, he patented the radio in the UK. Tesla did it in the United States. Now, Marconi argued that, you know, hey, I was able to make this thing work and no one else was, so I deserve the patent for this technology. And even argued so far as to say, hey, what Tesla coil? In which case a judge was saying, oh, come on. That's a common word here. Because like we said, these guys were rock stars. It's not like this stuff was obscure. This stuff was front page news.
Yes.
So people knew these terms. They didn't necessarily understand them all, but they knew what they knew of them. And so for someone to feign ignorance seemed disingenuous at best. So Marconi is arguing that he should be the one that people back, and Tesla isn't arguing as much because Tesla didn't feel that he needed to argue. He felt he was in the right. He didn't. Why should I come forward and fight tooth and nail with this guy when it's so obvious that I'm the person that credit should go to? That was kind of Tesla's viewpoint, as far as we can tell. You got to also remember, Tesla became increasingly mentally unstable toward the end of his life. He became more and more paranoid, possibly with good reason, because of the way he had been treated in his past. And so it's hard to kind of definitively say what the man was thinking. Also, he had had this rivalry with Edison.
Yes.
Right?
Well, that dated
back. Yes, it dated back to the World's Fair, where it was between Edison and Tesla. Whose system is going to power the World's Fair in Chicago? Is it going to be Edison's direct current power, or is it going to be Tesla's alternating current? Ultimately, it went to Tesla. Edison, not a man who drops a grudge easily.
No.
As it turns out.
No.
And so Edison's looking around, and he's saying, you know, this is going to be a big thing. This is going to make bukus of cash. I got to get in on this. Andrew Carnegie, great philanthropist, industrialist, he also says this is where it's at. This is the next huge development in technology. I'm getting in on this. They look around. You've got Tesla, who is brilliant, but is also self-destructive, not necessarily intentionally, but his behavior and his obsession with transmitting power over a long distance, broadcasting power, building essentially what it would amount to an enormous Tesla coil and cloaking the earth in electricity. Sounds a little like a mad scientist, not necessarily the guy you're going to go and dump heaps of cash on top of. So then they look at Marconi. Marconi, who has proven that his technology works, his technology, which admittedly rests on the shoulders of others like Tesla. Marconi even demonstrates that he can send a signal transatlantically across the entire ocean. He transmits the letter S in Morse code. And that proves that his system works. With a proven system, with a man who does not appear to be unhinged, that's the guy that everyone gives their money to. So Marconi starts to get the political and the financial support. And Marconi ends up coming over to America and even wins a patent for a radio. The patent that was previously not the same one, but the patent that had been Tesla's became overturned in court. And this is where the huge controversy is. People say that essentially that Edison, Carnegie, and even Marconi, who came from a family that was really well-connected and really wealthy in Europe, that they used their political and financial clout to force the patent office, essentially the court system of the United States, to overturn Tesla's patents so that Marconi could be the true patent holder for the inventor of radio. Meanwhile, Tesla's screaming to the heavens and shaking his tiny fists in vain.
No.
And also watching his lab burn down for the fourth or fifth time.
Yeah.
That happened. Tesla had a run of incredibly bad luck. We did do an episode on Tesla. I recommend you listen to that if you really want to hear the story of his life.
Yeah. Yeah. The loss of Wardenclyffe.
Oh, yeah. That was...
was, I think, probably would have affected his ability to defend his...
So... yeah.
Radio.
So now you've got, if you're asking officially who invented the radio, well, if you go and buy the documents in the United States government, it's Marconi.
Right.
But if you're going to ask an inventor, then you might hear a different answer. And it may not be Tesla. The inventor may say, well, yeah, Tesla was able to create the technology that made broadcast radio a viable thing. But if you want to talk about who invented the radio, you got to go back before him. So it's, like we said, a really complex topic.
Yes, and definitely fascinating to look at how these great inventors were all developing an important piece of the puzzle or improving upon the technology to increase distance and quality. It's just fascinating. And then you get into other things like which was the first radio station? And that, unfortunately, is not a clear answer
either. Yeah.
So
wait, so Chris,
yes?
I'm gonna ask you.
Okay.
Gun to the head.
Oh, no.
Yep. There is a man standing up in front of you. His gun is pointed toward your noggin. And he says, "Who invented the radio? You have to give me one name, and that's it. Ultimately, who do you say invented the radio?"
Tesla.
That's fair. I would say the same thing.
But I certainly wouldn't put down Marconi, because he did so much important work.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he did for radio that Tesla really wasn't doing was promoting the idea that it could be used for commercial purposes.
Yes.
And getting investors behind it, because Tesla was kind of sitting on it.
Yeah, Tesla was kind of like this rock star showman, but Marconi was a rock star businessman.
And he was really behind radio. I don't think he wasn't into as many different kinds of technology. I mean, Tesla was into all
Lots
sorts
of
things.
Yeah.
And Marconi was really the radio guy.
Yeah.
So
we've got some sources we'd like to mention to you guys to check out if you're really interested in this. Because like I said, this is a fascinating time in history. In fact, let me read. I meant to do this earlier, but I wanted to give you what Einstein said radio was.
Okay.
Einstein's definition of radio is one of my favorites. It says, "You see, wire telegraph is a kind of very, very long cat. You pull his tail in New York, and his head is meowing in Los Angeles. Do you understand this? Well, radio operates in the same way. You send signals here, they receive them there. The only difference is that there's no cat." I love that description. Like, oh, well, now it makes sense, Einstein. Thank you. Can you tell me about my relatives now? Just in general. Nothing special.
Just a theory.
So let's talk about some of the sources we use, because we came across some really, really useful ones.
Yeah, and it one of the things that I found funny about that, we were talking about how, just a moment ago, about how convoluted this whole thing is. A lot of my sources didn't overlap. So we sort of glued some of this together from different people, because I found a couple books at the library, and there might be at yours too. One was Sintony and Spark, The Origins of Radio by Hugh G.J. Aitken, A-I-T-K-E-N. And the other was Wireless, From Marconius Black Box to the Audion by Sungook Hong. Both of which were excellent and got into a whole lot more detail that we really, really can't get into now.
Yeah.
But Jonathan found a couple excellent websites that we used too that had Stubblefield wasn't in either one of those books.
Yeah, there's one that was done by Julian T. Rubin, and actually it's juliantrubin.com. There's a whole section about radio and the inventors. There are even other people that we didn't talk about, like Loomis and Bose and
DeForest.
Yeah, there's when we say that there were a lot of people working on this, that's not an exaggeration. There were way more than we were able to talk about in this episode. But yeah, if you want to learn more about them, I recommend that that site. Also, there is an excellent article by B. Eric Rhodes. That's R-H-O-A-D-S. Just who invented radio and which was the first station? It's also a really good read and a great overview of radio. And finally, there's a website called Amateur Radio and Electronics. The URL is vlowen.co.uk. So it's a British site. Also has a great section on radio and how it works and its history. So I recommend checking these out if you're interested in the topic. Also, we do have lots of articles on our site about radio. Like how radio works, how the radio spectrum works, how transistor radios work, how crystal radios work. All of that information you can find at howstuffworks.com. And if you're interested in this stuff, definitely take a look at it. There's a ton of different ways of actually building your own radio. I mean, that used to be a big thing back in the 50s and 60s, but you can still do it today. And it's a neat way to kind of learn some electronics and some engineering, and you get a real sense of accomplishment when you build something like that.
That's true. I built a crystal AM radio when I was a kid from a kit, which was a lot of fun. And it's just so sad that all these people worked so hard on the radio, and then in 1981, video killed the radio star.
Yeah, that was darn you, MTV.
And now I understand the problems you can see.
I remember that the second video was a Pat Benatar video. That's true.
Okay.
If you look it up, I just can't remember the name of the song now, but it was a Benatar video. Anyway, a little trivia for those people who lived through the launch of MTV. We're there for you. If you guys want to let us know about any topics you'd like us to cover or you have any comments or questions, you can get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. Our handle there is TechStuffHSW. Or you can send us an email. That address is TechStuff@HowStuffWorks.com. And Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.